Well, before I begin, I just wanted to say a profound thank you for the invitation to join you for your 10th anniversary dinner. It was such a beautiful evening and lovely to spend time with different people and to be together over a meal. So thank you so much. Mother Teresa says, "If we have no peace, it is because we have forgotten that we belong to each other." And there's an Irish proverb, which I didn't know you were going to sing an old Irish blessing when I pulled this old Irish proverb out, that says, "It is in the shelter of each other that the people live." It is in the shelter of each other that the people live. And Alice Walker says, "Whoever you are, whatever you are, start with that, whether salt of the earth or only white sugar." Well, today is a day when this passage called me to think a little bit about how we live in community with each other. Paul, in his letter to the Thessalonians, talks about sharing ourselves. In other translations, it says sharing our own souls, which to me is one layer deeper, and another sharing our lives. And all these, depending on your use of language, have very powerful meanings. What does it mean for the church today to share in this way? See, the word share has become so diminished in our culture because sharing is a Facebook click where whatever pictures of cats you put up there, you can share with thousands or millions of people around the world, however meaningless or silly or ridiculous that is. And you can share tens of thousands of your vacation photos. Remember how we used to sometimes consider it dull when people brought back 40 or 50 because, you know, there was only 10 on a roll of film and they'd invite you over for dinner and you'd think, oh. But now they can take thousands and store them in the little camera and upload them. And so there is this plethora of sharing, but they don't have to come to your house necessarily to share their news. They can send it out on Twitter. They can send it out on Facebook. You might read about it on TV. So sharing has become this huge disconnect where we actually don't have to be physically present. Some of you, when I was growing up, my dad used to get mad at us when we were on the telephone talking to our friends down the street, right? Why don't you just go down the street and talk to them? What a waste of time, you know? And then when my own daughter was growing up, I'm like, why are you texting when you could call them and actually hear their voice, you know? And now we're one generation, I think, getting even further. You don't have to call. You don't have to text. There's so many ways we can communicate without actually being together. And the other thing that struck me about this particular section and this particular letter is it departs from Paul's traditional and practical instructions that we're kind of used to. And he starts talking about sharing himself and his need to express his theology and share his doctrine are not quite as in your face. And so in many ways, this letter is a profound shift in Paul's communication and what is evolving in his understanding of ministry and mission and how to connect with people. And what does he mean when he says to share of ourselves? And he gives us actually a lot of hints. He's just come from a really difficult time in Philippi. Paul has traded in his prestigious image as a renowned scholar, academic, and elite religious leader to go on the road for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Gospel means good news, but the historical accounts of Paul's journeys seem to be anything but good news. Had Facebook been an option, he could have posted pictures of his shipwreck for everybody to see. His snake bites, his prison interior, which would have been hard since at least one of them was completely underground, with a large rock keeping him in complete darkness and dampness. He could have posted pictures of his bruises after the beating, the kangaroo trials he endured, the ridiculous questions, and the endless threat of losing his life. So this is actually the Paul that is beginning to emerge, the Paul that is beginning, I think, to become a little bit beaten down by his life. And this is at least a piece of each one of us, isn't it? We have given of ourselves and the world and often been beaten for it. Some of us have come from the prisons of our bodies and our health, and we have every reason in the world to be angry and frustrated and, hey, let's just give up. Let's just stay in bed. Pull the covers up over our head. In one edition, Paul says he has suffered and been treated outrageously, and yet. And those words caught my mind. And yet. Because he didn't say he'd been suffered and treated outrageously, but dismissing all that had happened to him. And he didn't say he had suffered and been treated outrageously, so, like there was, I'll try and take a different course, or because of, he said, and yet, that he is continuing his journey, his mission, his calling. And so the and yet is important in our quest to find a new way to continue to share ourselves. Because if you're relating to some of those prisons and darknesses and difficulties and challenges and being beaten up, start to put an and yet after that. And the first thing that Paul says he didn't do and doesn't want to do is to please people. And I think that's an important boundary to have. And sometimes when people say, I'm not pleasing anybody, it becomes a rude, obnoxious way of going through the world. I don't please anybody. Don't come near me because I'm not going to please you. But it doesn't mean that we should be give up being kind, considerate, polite, and understanding of the other. But if our first goal is to please others, then that precludes us from sharing ourselves, doesn't it? We lose sight of our own sacredness, our own belovedness, our own gifts, when we try to please others. When we recognize that we are the beloved of God, that God is smiling down on us and created us and approves of us, then we reach down and we offer that to another, and our eyes are on Jesus. But when we are worried about pleasing another, then our eyes are on them. Are they smiling? Do they approve? Are they giving us the feedback that we want? Have we pleased them? If we want to share ourselves with people, we actually have to let go of pleasing them. We have to focus our attention on Jesus, because that is the ultimate person that we need to focus on. The second thing that Paul says he doesn't do is flattery. And as I explored the meaning of flattery a little more, I realized that flattery denies community and degrades relationships. P.J. O'Rourke said, gossip is what you say about the objects of flattery when they aren't present. Eleanor Roosevelt said, I once had a rose named after me and I was very flattered, but I was not pleased to read the description of it in the catalog. No good in bed, but fine up against the wall. Edmund Burke said that flattery corrupts both the giver and the receiver. Think about that for a moment. Flattery corrupts the giver and the receiver. If we want to deepen our relationships with others, if we want to deepen this community, then flattery prevents that, because I feel the need to please you rather than be real with you, rather than acknowledge true appreciation for you that reflects who you are and what you've done. I tell you what you want to hear and what you think the world wants you to be. Think about that. I'm telling you what you think the world wants you to be. So we get this vicious circle of saying things that are meaningless, feeling things that are meaningless, and in that, we never discover who we are, who the people are around us, and how we can begin to share of ourselves in a way that honors Christ. I worry about programs in schools these days where they are being designed so that every child wins at every game all the time. There's no honest assessment, because without admonition and honesty and true appreciation, there's also no opportunity to discern our gifts. And really, what I worry about is we're setting up children to go out into a world that won't tell them that they're good all the time at everything. There was a study done in the U.S. with the children of some of the richest families in the world. And I don't mean like the people that live along the lakeshore. I mean the people that live in the big estates that cover acres and acres and have literally jets on the property at the children's disposals and limo drivers. And these children had access to any activity or lesson you could imagine. And what the research showed was that they were some of the most depressed and lost people on the planet. They were flattered everywhere they went because nobody wanted to offend the parents that wrote the charitable checks to their schools and sporting events. They were promoted where they should have failed. They were never told that maybe ballet dancing wasn't their gift. Their souls were empty because they were corrupted by flattery. Not having the financial restriction of being able to afford only one or two activities further left them as ghosts wandering through the world, unable to find their identity and meaning. Think about that for a minute. Maybe some of you couldn't afford even one activity. Or if you could afford one, and it was piano lessons, my goodness, you were going to finish the year's piano lessons because I paid for those year's piano lessons, and you will enjoy them. Right? But in that, they may have discovered something about themselves. Because you're not doing very well at piano, and you're going to finish your piano until it actually sounds like it's supposed to sound. Flattery corrodes meaning. And where there's no meaning, Christ is lost. Paul goes on to say that in this quest to be part of the community, he doesn't claim his rightful place and put a burden on the community to care for him. And he doesn't wear a mask to cover up his greed. Yes, we can point to the obvious faces of greed that are splashed across our newspapers each day. Or we can look in the mirror and remember that food that is thrown out is at the expense of a hungry child. I have clothes in my closet that I have bought years ago that I haven't worn, while people are naked. I have more shoes than I need, although I'm not planning on giving that up anytime soon. I wash my clothes in hot water, taking more energy from the planet than I need to have clean clothes. There was a story this week of a family that was throwing away their garbage for the year, contained in one small mason jar. If it had packaging, they didn't buy it. They reused. They recycled. The face of my greed is my garbage at the curb. The things I could have recycled. The miles I could have walked. We can't be greedy and share ourselves. We can't be greedy and share ourselves. It's just a diametrically opposite thing. He finally says he's not looking for praise. We may receive praise, but we're not to be looking for it. Our motivation in sharing our lives is sharing of the good news. Really looking for praise actually probably invites flattery, right? Because people will tell you what you want to hear just to get rid of you. Instead, Paul offers us two images of how we can be. He says that he was like a child among them. Not childish, Not childish. I know you're going to a meeting after this. Not childish. Just as Jesus reminded us that the kingdom of heaven is like a child, so we must become like little children when we want to share ourselves. Children have a natural way of sharing. They only understand the value of a dollar as something that can make someone happy. If you ask them for the few precious coins that they have because it will make someone happy, most children will give them up. They come into the hospital with a picture they've drawn because they know it will fix their grandma and grandpa and make them so happy. And you know what? It does. It works. They don't get in the sandbox and go, okay, there's four of us here, here, that's your quadrant, that's my chart, and don't come over my side. The way we build fences. I remember being here when you had your grandbabies here, and they were all the attention. Their love and their delight and their innocence draws everybody in. And isn't that what we want to create when we're sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? As Paul's letting go, not letting go of his doctrine or his theology, but embracing it in a way that he believes will invite people in with childlike innocence. When the children are here for the children's story, they delight us with their wisdoms and their answers. And sometimes their wisdom is so profound, it astounds us. Paul says that he cared for his people as a nursing mother cares for her children. That is to give to the community the life-sustaining nourishment that it needs through your undivided attention. Can we become like little children? I want this to be our homework for this week, to study how children share themselves. Watch how they give you their honest answers and observations. They have no sense of their rightful place and what they're owed. They will play with a child from a poor or from a rich family. They don't particularly check out the credentials. They won't see the color of the skin or worry about speaking even the same language. You can put children in the room that don't speak the same language, and they will play together just fine as long as the adults don't interfere. They will give of themselves, and they will engage deeply. So this is your homework. I want you to go to the park, invite children or grandchildren over, spend some time wondering how you can share your soul, share your life, or share yourself. Amen. Speaking of the wisdom of children, one day the father of a wealthy family took his son on a trip to the country with the express purpose of showing him how poor people live. They spent a couple of days and nights on the farm of what would have been considered a very poor family. On their return home from the trip, the father asked his son, "How was the trip?" "It was great, Dad. Did you see how poor people live?" The father asked him. "Oh, yeah," said the son. "So tell me, what did you learn from the trip?" asked the father. The son answered, "I saw that we have one dog and they have four. We have a pool that reaches to the middle of our garden and they have a creek that has no end. We have imported lanterns in our garden and they have the stars at night. Our patio reaches to the front yard and they have the whole horizon. We have a small piece of land to live on and they have fields that go beyond our sight. We have servants who serve us, but they serve others. We buy our food, but they grow theirs. We have walls around our property to protect us. They have friends to protect them." The boy's father was speechless. Then his son added, "Thanks, Dad, for showing me how poor we are." Well, the offering plate is another place to express our gratitude to God for the fact that we are never poor when we are in Jesus Christ.